You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Stephanie Ellis Schlaefer. Stephanie, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thanks so much for having me.
And I should ask, where are you? Are you in Missouri or somewhere else?
Yes, I am. I am in St. Louis.
You're in St. Louis. Okay, very good. So to begin with, I know you're going to read some work, some poems, but let's talk about the book that perhaps you're working on now or what your current work is, and then talk about the past book and what you're reading from.
Sure. My current project is I think almost done with. My second manuscript is a series of poems that imagine that sort of investigate the bureaucracy of the mind. So they imagine the brain as a collection of governing bodies complete with cabinet ministers and departments and a president, of course, and a press secretary and a curator and all sorts of other governmental officials that oversee very specific functions of the mind. So I've been working on that for the last few years, and they sort of range in tone from light and humorous to dark and gruesome. And so that's what I've been investigating with in my writing. And I'm just starting to delve into the visual art side of that and what that might entail.
And by the visual art side of that, you mean writing and potentially describing visual art. Is that correct?
Well, usually I work both as an installation artist, as a sculptor, and as a poet. So I often work back and forth between the two, between the two. So I will oftentimes either write something and then make art that has to do with it, sometimes as a response, but oftentimes it just allows me a different way of exploring the same ideas and the same concepts, but in a completely different format, and they tend to feed off of each other. So sometimes the writing comes first, sometimes the visual comes first. I tend to use them both as prompts for the other.
So in this case, you're talking about the mind and all these the bureaucracy and positions and red tape. I would imagine how will that be visualized in an installation? I know you can't describe that now, but that's part of the end product of what you're working on. Besides the poem, is a visual manifestation of that?
Yeah. So one thing, I often work with a creative partner, another visual artist named Cheryl Wassenaar. We've collaborated before on work based on my first book, Cleave Mark. And so for this new body of work, we're just sort of at the beginning stages of discussing what this what these new poems might mean. And so we've talked a little bit about perhaps making installations that that create the imaginary offices of these imaginary officials. And, you know, what does their desk look like, and what sort of stuff do they have in there, and how do they organize their things, and sort of like the taxonomy of their obsessions and their objects and their what sort of visual language would we use to create the habitats for each of these sort of mental officials.
Right. Well, it sounds like it could be really cinematic or theatrical too, because there is a cast of characters that are always interacting.
Yes, absolutely.
So what genre is that? I mean, you know, I'm thinking it's kind of existential, but it's not existentialism, right? It's also sort of fantastic, right, or surreal. How do you see it? Is it, am I being too narrow to try to think of what field this is in terms of its, you know, where it's drawing from?
No, I think it's a good question. I'm not sure I have a if I have a great answer. There, it certainly leans on surrealism. It certainly draws from that insofar as it's very much of the imagination. But on the other hand, I guess I'm. It's also very much grounded in what is believable and what is sort of. I think there's also a deep realism to it, even if they aren't real people.
Well, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, that's, I know it's a difficult question. It crosses over a number of things, which is, but that's so interesting. So I'd love to hear a few. A few poems, but should, are you going to read from something recent first, or a past book?
Yeah, I think I'll start with a poem or two from Cleavemark, my first book, which just came out this fall. So it's still, I mean, I started writing it a long time ago, but it's still new to me. And then I'll read. Then I'll read one of the cabinet poems. The okay. poem I think that I'll read for from that series is actually not specifically a cabinet poem, but it's more of an ekphrastic poem about the news in general. One of the things that I have been working on with that series is obviously influenced heavily by the current political climate and sort of draws on that as a constant source of inspiration slash desperation. So, I think that will come through. But I'll read a couple from Cleavemark and then I'll move on to that one if that sounds good.
That sounds perfect.
Okay, so the one I'll start with in Cleavemark is called Similitude. Cleavemark is a book-length lament for my grandmother who was killed by a drunk semi-truck driver when I was 11. And so this poem is about that. Similitude. The room that they have brought us to is dark. You cannot see the body. Not because of this, but because of this. You might expect a service, someone to officiate, but it's nothing but waiting. You and the room's true elephant, handsome as a piece of furniture, accordingly appointed. Purposely, no one is looking in it. Ask why it is so dark, why the room is red, why the room is always red, and gracious as a hotel bar. A red room like the one on television. Heavy curtains covering false windows. A riddle in its sleep which hastens you to navigate an opening. Imagine then an otherwise clear night in winter. Sharp glass a quarter mile from the Fort George Island Bridge. The glove compartment splintering her chest, and now so many visitors, cake makeup, a barricade of tacky wreaths. If navy blue is dark enough, ask why you cannot see the body. The next one I'll read is actually the last piece in the book. The title and it sort of the title poem. It's called Cleavemark Drive, which was the name of my grandparents' street. And I have no idea how this street got that name, but Cleave is one of those beautiful words that means its opposite. And so I like this, this idea of cutting and clinging to. So this piece is dedicated to my pop. Not the live oak. Sand mount to anthill, you know better. The acorns, yes. The particularly silvery asphalt. The pin, you say. Your house might smell the same. Cutting vegetables for chicken, I ask you, mid-rib through breast meat, is it strange to have a craving for liver? And what's a giblet? How do you tell the difference between the liver and the heart? So, okay, like liverwurst, what is that? You summon so exactly pounds of him to spread on hearty rounds of rye. And standing here over a bowl full of necks, I want to say, he just handed me a cracker. But how can I get its legs off without messing up the skin? Growing up in this house again is like eggshells over eggshells. You need a pair of scissors that can cut through bone.
Very beautiful. Thank you. Thanks.
Oh, for those. So should
I? I'd like to talk about the cabinet or the in that series and read from there. Those two are evocative of the pathos of that book, aren't they? In the sense that they're very very emotional, very deeply felt, and also about a memory. Or a series of memories.
Yeah, absolutely. I really wanted to. I really struggled with the first, probably the first 10 poems in this book, and just to get into the language and the mental space that I wanted to be in and to convey, and because obviously these are drawing from childhood memories, which are notoriously unreliable and inaccessible and often completely uninteresting to other people, and so I worked, I sketched a lot for this to create this book, and trying to figure out how to what framework I wanted to use, and I ended up using the actual architecture of my grandparents' house and the house that I grew up in as a sort of structure for the book. So there's a whole series of elevations in there, and it doesn't go necessarily room by room, but there are very specific details where I attempt to try and put the house back together again that was sort of fading from my memory.
Hmm. I love the way you put that. So now we're going to talk about what you were discussing at the beginning of the interview, this bureaucracy of, the cabinet, how do you phrase it, the bureaucracy of the mind, the brain? And
Yeah. So most of the poems are from are titled The Minister of the Cabinet of such and such. So there's the Minister of the Cabinet of Ordinary Affairs and the Minister of the Cabinet of Desire and Lesser Offenses. And most recently I wrote one called The Minister of the Cabinet of Decorum that takes on this cabinet minister has a problem with Louise Bourgeois. So sometimes there are a lot of ekphrastic poems that are written about or inspired by a piece of visual art, or sometimes just a piece of visual information. So some of the cabinet ministers you won't like, because certainly there are parts of ourselves that we detest.
Right.
So she's one of those. I'm not sure what I think of her yet, but if you want, I could read that one and then one other.
Yes. Let's read those too. That sounds good.
Okay. I'll start with her then. The Minister of the Cabinet of Decorum always hated Louise because Louise was always substituting one thing for another. abstracting rage as desire, orgasm as metonym, but no one's ever getting off. Louise insisted her clouds weren't dicks. So then what was she planning on using that knife for? Louise saw things through a man's eyes, so when she cut out his eyes, she saw nothing at all. Louise made the minister see her own body as a hideous double negative in degrading rubber, while Louise remained pristine as marble, but as full of holes and phallocentric as Pietrasanta plasters. The minister thought Louise was a dick because Louise was self-cannibalizing. Louise prepared a dinner for the family, of the family, and then she ate the family. The minister was never allowed to do anything of the sort at the dinner table, or any place else, for that matter. The minister resented the implication that this was that, or that she was that, and she resented the confrontation, and she resented she had to be the minister at all. But she held her tongue, as she was taught to do, like an unswallowable piece of gristle. "You bite your tongue," she'd say to herself. "You pretend that it's delicious. And don't you ever let anyone see you spit it out."
Very powerful, yeah. So that was from The Cabinet?
Yeah, that's from The Cabinet series.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you're going to read us another from The Cabinet series.
Yeah, just one more. So this is the one that's sort of an ekphrastic piece about the news in general. You could sort of pick any night of the week. The night that I was watching the PBS NewsHour aired some beautiful photograph of Paris right before they Judy Woodruff gave the synopsis of the news of the day, which was gruesome and awful as usual. So the conflation of that information with that beautiful image prompted this. And it's called "We All Wanted the Same Thing, But Things Ripped." We all wanted the same thing, but things ripped open. Pink flesh on gold thrones, the bones of empires. Golden avenues of sunset light, gold in every helping of rotting flesh that birds came to feast upon. They called and we feasted. We feasted on it. We pushed our beaks into eyelids, into follicles, into yolky membranes. We pecked things down to the socket and mellowed at the yellowing edges. We memorized what we'd cannibalized, selectively in pictures, at the backs of our eyes. While everything looked like, smelled like, tasted like butter, everything with an odor of fat. The air inside us was thick with riches, and we lapped at it. We gnawed ourselves from rib to nipple, to bloody breast, until we couldn't tell one thing from another.
Thank you so much, Stephanie. They're both very powerful, you know, and it also makes me think the idea of the cabinet is a wonderful, I mean, for you it must be a very exciting structure to explore because, as you were saying earlier, characters like Louise, you can almost like a director, a filmmaker, you begin to work from all these different vantage points, right? As it's completely free, as I suppose all art is, but it just seems to be a wonderful structure to introduce absolutely anything into.
It absolutely is. It's sometimes I struggle to figure out the actual structure of the brain. I try to, some of them are much more literal and some of them are less familiar. And maybe some people don't have certain cabinets or cabinet ministers. Not all of them are shared. But it's a really fun framework to work in, and it does it does create an automatic prompt. It's going to be hard to know when it's really done. And I've also been working with another fun thing that I've been trying to work with is having them interact with each other. So there are some poems where one cabinet minister, you know, takes on another one. They have an argument, or they pardon them, or they band together and do something else. So, you know, thinking about how really why people do the things that they do, and what's to blame for that, and who influences, what those influences are, and the real links, the real psychological links sort of play out in these different personas.
And what will happen with this group of poems? I know some of them, and there'll be links that listeners can go to in the interview, but what will happen with this group of poems? Will that be, are you planning a book of just these?
Yeah. I haven't started sending it out yet, but when it's done, I'll start sending it out to contests and publishers. Many of the poems have appeared in journals already, so I can give you links to some of those. And then, I'll start working hopefully intensely on the visual manifestation of them, and that might generate some new poems as well.
And lastly, the question I always ask, a little off topic, what are you reading now? Could be anything at all, but what are you reading? What's on your nightstand?
Well, a lot of literary journals, of course, but in the summer I do like to read novels. I like to read them all year, but right now I'm reading a book that my mother gave me, Kate Atkinson's Life After Life. I just finished Their Eyes Were Watching God, and I've also just started American Pastoral. And last fall I read Robin Schiff's new book called A Woman of Property, and it really blew me away. I highly recommend it. She's an amazing writer. She has a very controlled blade of language, I think. That's what I'm into at the moment.
Stephanie, I want to thank you for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure talking to you and hearing your poems.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.